Today, on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
Even with very small amounts of lung fibrosis present in people that didn't have an ILD diagnosis, if the computer finds features consistent with UIP and scores somebody as having a high UIP likelihood, they tend to have a more rapid increase in their amount of fibrosis on follow-up CT scans going out even 10 years.
Today, Drs. Humphreys and Swigris join the podcast to discuss AI, machine learning, and HRCT in ILD, challenges and future opportunities in this PureDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative supporter.
Welcome back to the next part of our discussion on AI in imaging of interstitial lung disease.
I'm Steve Humphreys. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Radiology, also at National Jewish Health, where I direct the Quantitative Imaging Laboratory.
I'm Jeff Swigris. I'm a professor of medicine in the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care and Sleep Medicine at National Jewish Health in Denver, Colorado. I'm also a member of the Center for Interstitial Lung Disease there.
The recognition that two radiologists, even with expertise in the area, may disagree about that classification.
Right.
We were just trying to leverage emerging machine learning technology to see if we could do this better. So we used an approach called multiple instance learning. So that's a bit of jargon from the machine learning world. But what that means is our sense was that there are small features in the CT scan, localized, that are the cues for UIP.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of a needle in the haystack kind of phenomenon. So we wanted to structure the computer's analysis of the scan so it was focused on small areas, but could kind of aggregate observations in small areas into a classification at the entire subject level. So this multiple instance learning basically breaks the CT scan up into chunks and then evaluates, does this piece look like UIP? And does that over hundreds of areas of a whole lung volume, and then kind of sums that together to come up with a final classification.
So then the training, so to speak, is different from DTA in that it sounds like radiologists weren't actually looking at scans and saying this is consistent with what we would see on UIP. It's a little bit different.
Exactly, yeah. So in this case, we used a data set where we had a CT scan available, and then within some short period of time, a lung biopsy. Mm. So the primary data was the label of UIP, not derived from the CT scan itself, but derived from this concurrent biopsy. I think that's an interesting distinction because, as I mentioned earlier, what that allows, or that at least sets up the training process to find features of the CT scan that may not be the things that a radiologist is looking for based on current criteria. And that's sort of what we found when we validated it. We used other data sets that had CT and concurrent lung biopsy and ended up finding that this machine learning algorithm was more sensitive than radiologist visual assessment for the prediction of biopsy-proven UIP.
Mm. So fascinating. So you could, in the same patient, get a CT scan and then subject the data from that CT scan to DTA and MIL. What happens when you do that? I mean, what do the two algorithms together show us in cohorts of patients?
Yeah, that's been really interesting, and that's a research focus of ours now. The pieces of information are complementary. What we're observing is that the amount of lung fibrosis, quantified by DTA, is again a really important parameter to know for prognosis and patient status. But people who have a classification of UIP by this computer algorithm also tend to get worse faster and have kind of a poorer rate of survival. So the two pieces of information provide independent prognostic data, but there's at some point the amount of fibrosis kind of overtakes the significance of the UIP pattern. And I don't know exactly how to interpret it from my standpoint, but certainly in repeated analyses, we've seen that, especially at early phases, the ability to classify a UIP pattern seems to give us information that would kind of allow stratifying a higher risk group.
Right.
And we've done that. We have some current work looking at that in early disease. This would be a study we call it an observational cohort. So we've looked at a study called COPD gene, which is actually meant to be a study on a different kind of lung disease, emphysema, and enrolled a population of people with a smoking history. And what we're seeing there is that even with very small amounts of lung fibrosis present in people that didn't have an ILD diagnosis, if the computer finds features consistent with UIP and scores somebody as having a high UIP likelihood, they tend to have a more rapid increase in their amount of fibrosis on follow-up CT scans going out even 10 years.
Right, which is one, fascinating, and two, really important. I mean, if these are people who are just getting scans because they have emphysema or had a smoking history or whatever, and now we're identifying, oh, you have very subtle abnormalities there, but we can pick up, they may not be so subtle and they are likely to progress. I mean, that's a patient that as a clinician, you know, I probably want to at least talk about or put on therapy early in the hopes of preserving lung function. So I think that's one of the key features also of DTA is identifying disease earlier, and hopefully as our knowledge of drugs increases and we have increasingly effective drugs, we find out that we can put people on drugs earlier and actually prevent fibrosis from occurring. We're not quite there yet, but we see that in the future for sure. So Steve, this all sounds incredible, but surely there's more work to be done before radiologists are put out of their jobs. So what are the weaknesses of these AI-based tools?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's certainly a lot of work to be done. We have promising results. I don't think AI will put radiologists out of their jobs in the foreseeable future, but rather over time, as we improve these things, I think radiologists have the opportunity to learn from AI. Certainly the clinicians do as well. I mean, the development of these techniques was motivated by a perceived need, but the tools didn't really have a precedent before. So, suddenly if you have the ability to measure things down to a much smaller level of precision, it takes a little while to adapt and figure out how to use that and what the clinical significance is. But important weaknesses to mention in AI and machine learning are that, one, they're sort of black boxes at this point. So by that, I mean, as we talked about training, you expose a computer algorithm to an input and a desired output. You may be able to test if you're getting the desired output most of the time, but it can be tricky to figure out what exactly is happening or what the numbers are saying behind the scenes. We've tried to do some research into explainability of the models, meaning trying to kind of peer inside the black box and figure out what it's looking at. And that's certainly been interesting in our UIP work. I think other factors to mention in terms of weaknesses are the dependence on data. So these are, again, the algorithms kind of have baked in historical data, and things change over time. Technology and CT scanners is a prime example. Yeah. So when we've trained algorithms that exist today, necessarily we're looking backwards to gather up the large amounts of data needed to train an algorithm, and then we can deploy it moving forward. If a new model CT scanner comes out or something changes, there's an issue of what we call data drift. So making our technologies more resilient to subtle changes in the available data is a key point. Another factor is just, radiology as a field, again, historically, it's been all about visual assessment of images. As more and more of these computer techniques get deployed in real clinical practice, then I think we're going to have to stop making CT scanners that are strictly made for putting images in front of radiologists mm-hmm. and more made for computational analysis mm-hmm. of scans.
Yeah.
So there's, again, I think it's not just up to the algorithms to figure out this, but sort of the end users as radiologists, pulmonologists, and even the expectations of patients.
Right.
And then kind of an evolution in the CT scans as, again, not just making images for visual consumption, but for quantification.
Yeah. All right, Steve, thanks so much. This has really been a great discussion. Thanks for joining me today. And thank you to the audience for tuning in.
My pleasure, Jeff. This has been great.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Peer Direct Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, what's my Flash Briefing? Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Humphreys and Zweigris. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.